There's a lot that's been going on this past week. I sent a message out on a weekly update this past evening. I think most of you or many of you have received that. But if you've been following the news, then you realize that in Europe a lot has been happening. We had a sermon this morning up in the Berthoud area still, but it's a North Front Range area. On a little bit on that subject. But we realize that one-third of the Bible is prophecy. I think all of us know that. We don't probably hear that too often, where we hear that one-third of the Bible is prophecy. Back in the 1930s and 1940s, of course, that was stressed when we were talking about World War II, and right after World War II, there was a lot of information concerning prophecy, but that prophecy is still in the Bible. We know that Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel and all the minor prophets were prophesying. And of course, we had other prophecies besides those books. Daniel is a book that's not in the prophets, but it's still a book on prophecy. But in the church, we know a lot that is going on. We understand what has been prophesied to a great degree. We have articles. And when you see what we have in Ezekiel chapter 3 and verse 17, Ezekiel chapter 3 and verse 17, we see that the church has a commission, something that we are supposed to do. Ezekiel 3 and verse 17 says, "Son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore, hear a word from my mouth and give them a warning from me." There are scriptures that we will read today that tells us that we as Christians are supposed to watch. And that commission has been given, of course, to preach the gospel to the world as a witness. We realize that. But also we see in the prophets that at the time there was imminent possibilities of another nation coming in to take over Israel, house of Israel, in this case with Ezekiel. We realize that there's a timing where if you say too much, it's wolf, wolf. You know, if you're always crying out, then people say, you know, I've heard this so many times, nothing has happened, and it's not going to happen. But when we have situations like we do right now in the world, and we know the basic outline of history and the prophecies that are going to be fulfilled, is a good time to recognize that that is a commission to the church. If you'll turn to Ezekiel 33, Ezekiel 33 and verses 2 through 7, you'll see again some of the same words. It's a little bit more that we find that chapter 33. Here it tells us, verse 2, "Son of man, speak to the children of your people and say to them, when I bring the sword upon the land and the people of the land take a man from their territory and make him their watchman." So you know, and we know, that nations have had other armies that were coming in. And we know, based on the trumpets that we read about, Feast of Trumpets, talking about the trumpets that proclaim the holy day that is going to be coming in. Then we also realize that a trumpet, there was a sound of war where people recognized they had better either go to the main city or perhaps flee in other ways. When he sees this war, a sword coming upon the land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sword comes and takes him away, his blood shall be on his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet, but did not take warning. His blood shall be upon himself. But he who takes warning will save his life. But if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and the sword comes and takes away any person from among them, he's taken away in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at the watchman's hand. So when the church knows so much, and I'm not saying that only the church knows all of these things. There are people who understand Daniel 2. Oftentimes, they've actually received that information from us in the booklets that we've had in the past. There is a minister down in San Antonio who came up with pictures. It seemed like we won't say stole them, but he copied them from us because it was the same pictures, basically, with maybe a few minor differences. And also the warning message, what the man was saying, was similar, almost exactly what we were preaching. So there have been people who've received that information from us. In fact, there's a man who wrote a book, and he finally agreed that one of our ministers actually went to his meeting, and then he said, "Are you familiar with the teaching of the Church of God?" And the man finally had to say, yes, that's where he got most of his information. But the bottom line is that when the church knows these things, then we have the responsibility of teaching them. God's church does have a history of warning the world since the 1930s. I would say also that it's easier now to communicate to the whole world. I mean now, meaning in the 20th century, it was easier to communicate to the whole world than in the 19th century. We find Ezekiel, of course, telling us that there was a watchman in each city who blew a trumpet. That's how they did it. Later on, how do you warn the whole world in, 1500? How do you do that? Well, you don't. In the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s. But in actuality, there was no end time events transpiring soon in the 1700s. Although people did think back then that the end of the world was coming. I think you've heard stories where people come up with weapons of destruction, meaning a Gatling gun, and that would be the end of the world because that gun was, could wipe out so many people so quickly. But we do know that we are living in a nuclear age, and the time is getting closer, and we know the outline of history and of the end time, and we can see that that outline is being filled in. And when we see what's happening, even in the past week, and the last, I won't give too much information right away, but I think all of us are pretty aware of what has happened if you're watching the news at all. So back in the 1930s, back in the 1940s, we have articles where you can see the church was teaching more about the end time. We were off in our timing, but only about by 90 years. And when you take a look at the 6,000-year history of the church, we realize that in the last 90 years is a period of end-time events. So we can't say, and we remember, too, that the Apostle Paul and perhaps the Apostle Peter thought it was the end of the age, even back in their time. In the, if you heard David Johnson giving the 1st and 2nd Thessalonians FI online classes, he went through some of that, how the Thessalonians thought it was the end time. And of course, as time went by, they realized it was going to be a few more days. And of course, when John was prophesying in the book of Revelation, even more of a history and understanding, comprehension of the end time was available. Well, we look at our past history, we realize in the 1950s, when you read the Plaintooth magazine, I'm not going to ask how many of you were alive in 1950, because maybe 90% of everybody would raise their hand. I don't think it would be that much. But I remember reading articles that started in the 1950s. They were written, and then they were repeated in the 1960s. You would see a lot of those. But in the 50s all the way through the 90s, the Plaintooth magazine was talking about trade war. It was talking about the leaders of the nations, especially of Germany. And you would see in one PT, I forget when it would be, probably the 1970s anyway, where you would see a picture of the Chancellor of Germany on the front page. And there would be information concerning the European Union. We had one article, I remember, by Mr. Hogberg, not the young man, but the older Mr. Hogberg, if some of you knew him, some of you probably had him in a class. But we had an article about the euro and how when that came into being, in fact, we had articles in books too, or from books that we read concerning Germany by other authors saying the European Union cannot be together, unified, until they have a monetary or a paper dollar, so to speak, of their own, a paper euro in this case. So there were articles on that, stages of German unification. It started with the steel and coal community. How many of you remember that? You can look in history, and I think that started in about 1947. Also, we were following news of the Middle East and watching what was happening over there. And I still remember when I was in college, this was my senior year, where we thought the Middle East was about to blow up. We've seen wars in the Middle East. You can read about them. The Day of Atonement War, was that the Yom Kippur War? So we've had this information, and in all of it, there was warnings about making sure that we knew the end was coming, that Christ was going to return, and we should set our lives in order. And of course, again, in all of the articles we have, we did have that individual warning to make sure that we were right. There was other articles. I have an article that, I think I brought it up here, is Germany and Prophecy, that came out the second time in 1962, and that was basically 2 months after I came to Ambassador College, when Mr. Neff and I were we were freshmen in college at that time, and that's when that was a reprint. It had been around in the 1950s, and we see in this one where the author was talking about Germany being Assyria. Quite a bit of detail on that, because we do have prophecies in the Bible about Assyria, and we'll read one of those a little bit later. And then also we had another thesis, in this case, a thesis. This is a thesis presented to the faculty of the Graduate School, Ambassador College, and this came out in 1969. It's by Gerhard Marx, who was a German, and it's about a 2,000-year analysis of the German character. It's hard to find something where it's easy to read. The pages, a lot of the pages that I have, are very poor copies, and I tried to do my best to get really good copies, but this is, about 100 pages long on the German character. And it goes right along with books that have been written about the German character, and you can see how the Germans play a very important part at the end time. Now, what do we know about the end time from Scripture? Let's take a look in 1 Thessalonians 5. And we are going to center quite a bit of this on Germany. There have been books written concerning, in fact, there's a series on the European Union, and the last book printed says, without Germany, there is no European Union. That's the only way the European Union is going to stay together, is if you have a strong leader. And of course, that was written before 2 years ago, but still, the world recognizes, even with what's going on in Germany today, that they must play a very important part in the formation of a strong, weaponized European Union, for sure. So I pointed to this scripture last night. I sent in the weekly update a paragraph out, and it included 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, concerning the times and the seasons. Brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. We don't have access to the sermons that the Apostle Paul gave in Thessalonica. We don't have access to those, but oftentimes he says, don't you remember I told you these things? You know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. Now, I'd like you to keep a note. Well, you have a marker, maybe. I have markers here, and you have a marker. Maybe you can keep your thumb in there to come back to 1 Thessalonians. But I'd like to take us for an instant over to Revelation chapter 17. We know that this is an end time prophecy, Revelation 17. We're familiar with Revelation 18 that talks about the fall of Babylon. So we have Revelation 17, and we'll pick it up here in verse 12. Revelation 17 and verse 12. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet. Right now in the European Union, and we definitely feel that these 10 horns would be the last resurrection. In fact, you can tell by the context that this is the last resurrection of the Roman Empire. Because in this scenario, we have Jesus Christ returning. So you have then 10 kings. Right now in the European Union, there's 27, but there's a lot of division. I think we all know that. So you have 10 kings in verse 12 who had received no kingdom as of yet. What is it saying? Well, read on and we'll see what it's talking about. But they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. Now, we just read in 1 Thessalonians 5 that there's going to be a time where it is a short period of time, and we'll come back and read more there, but it's going to be a period of time that is not a long period of time, as we will read when we come back. Here it says at the end time, and remember, it's the beast and the false prophet that are going to be destroyed when Jesus Christ comes. So we know this is an end time event. So the 10 kings receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. So you have two entities there, don't you? You have the 10 kings, and then you have the beast, which would be not one of the kings. So now, beast could be a king, I'm not saying, or the beast could be a chancellor, certainly. But there is an authority figure who is going to be very powerful when the 10 kings combine with the beast. In fact, we read that there is no nation, no military that is going to be able to destroy the beast power. So those 10 kings unite with the beast. These are of one mind in verse 13, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. So there's military. We do see, as we will read maybe a little bit later, and if you followed what's going on in Europe, you'll see that the Europeans realize that they have to go on their own, and they have to have very strong militaries. I looked up the other day to see how many soldiers, how many individuals are in the military in some of these countries. They named the top 10 countries in the European Union. Now, you have NATO also, of course, and there's 27 EU countries, plus there's some other countries that are in NATO. But what we find then here is just read on down in verse 14. These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. So we absolutely know this is definitely, without any doubt at all, an end time event because of what it just said. You have the 10 kings make war of the beast, and they are going to fight Jesus Christ. Then he said, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. And the 10 horns which you saw on the beast, now you have a beast, you have 10 horns, but in the Bible, if we read more about Babylon, you see that Babylon reigns, controls the beast. And so what has to happen in order for Babylon no longer able to control the beast with the 10 kings? The 10 horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot. And the harlot is described as Babylon here. Make her desolate, naked, eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. For God has put it into their hearts to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind, and to give their kingdom to the beast. The ten kings have no kingdom as such, no powerful kingdom, but they give their little small country governments into the hand of the beast and their militaries. I mentioned about the militaries. What country right now do you think has the strongest, or maybe not the strongest, but the largest military in the European Union? Well, it's the Italians. It's the Italians. Well, they're lovers. They're not fighters. So why would the Italians have the biggest army? Well, there's still conscription over there. Some of the other countries don't have conscription. The next biggest would be France. And they have a lot of good military weaponry. And then the next ones you see would be in the 189,000, 183,000. Germany is down the line at about 183,000 soldiers, but all of these countries want to ramp up military. It does say, when you read about the size of the militaries, it does say that Germany has the best technology and the best engineering, that there's no country that has better. And also, most of the European countries receive and buy their weaponry from Europe, well, Germany specifically, and the United States. That's where they get their weaponry. So anyway, what we're seeing here is there's a period of time, and there's a 1 hour that is stated where you have the 10 kings that give their power to the beast. Very short time. So when we read, and let's go back to verse 3 of 1 Thessalonians 5. When they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them. Now it's as a thief in the night, so that's going to be a period where it is a short period of time. And it's like a thief in the night, that's a short time, and it's a surprise. The world is not going to be aware of something that's coming on that's going to give many nations much destruction, especially the time of Jacob's trouble. When they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them. And that means that there is going to be a period of time where it seems like the entire world is safe. And perhaps I'll bring up a statement, maybe since we're in the context, I will just say that Germany in the Munich Conference of 2014 said that they are best at solving conflicts in the world. Germany, that really peaceful, historical, loving, kind people of course, they're best at solving conflicts, aren't they? But that's what they said. That's what the leader of Germany said at that time. So there's a period of time when there's going to be safety. Now, we won't go through all the details, but we do recognize that there is a push from the king of the south, the Arab countries, and we follow what Daniel says, and we've had articles on who the king of the south is, and it's down in the Egyptian area. And by the way, we do realize that we have the Saudi Arabians, who are such good, peaceful negotiators, the Saudi Arabian people who were responsible for 9/11 and the takedown of the two towers. It is very interesting that they're the ones that are mediating peace over in Europe, the Saudi Arabians. And of course, there are conflicts that they have too with some of the other areas. And also, while I'm talking about it, I was reading an article from a woman whose name I can't pronounce, but it was a recent article, and it was titled, I may have it up here, I may not, Fatal Flaw of the Middle East is what it was, The Fatal Flaw of the Middle East. And basically, you go through this, and all you have to do is read, and it's, I have this in font 11, and it's 4 pages long. And you read this, and the more you read, the more you see that what she says, and she does say, a two-state solution is not the way to peace. Now, if you have a two-state solution, and that's not the way to peace, what is she promoting? She's promoting a one-state solution, a Palestinian government, and she mentions so many times in the article, and I thought, who is this woman? And so I looked up who she was, and she's with the Trilateral Commission. And if you know anything about the Trilateral Commission, which I have not paid attention to, but there is a conspiracy theory is that certain groups control the world, okay, and she's with a group, and she is promoting a strong Palestinian government and basically derides what Israel is doing and what foreign governments' involvements are doing. And that is very interesting. Now, when it comes, by the way, to the end time, I'll just add this. When you read, as we will very soon, when you read that Assyria is the rod of God's anger, and when you read that they do not mean to do so, it is not in their heart to do so, then all of a sudden this conspiracy on that part is taken away because they have not been conspiring to take out Jerusalem, is the context. And it's a dual prophecy. But they haven't been conspiring to do that. They haven't been, you know, waiting for years and years to take out Jerusalem. It is not in their heart. It's something that happens as a reaction, and they have to do it. They're prompted to do it for some reason. And I think we kind of know the reason. So you see all of this happening then, and let's continue in 1 Thessalonians. You, brethren, are not in darkness. And, well, I didn't finish. It says, as labor pains, verse 3, upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. How fast, when you're pregnant, do you know when you are going to have those babies? How do you know when it's going to come? Very, very quickly. And it's like when is it beer that breaks? No, it's the water that breaks. When the water breaks, I mean, you can be going along normally. There's no problem. You don't have any idea that, you may think it's 2 weeks before the baby is born, then the water breaks. That's how fast things happen. And that's what it says here, labor pains upon a pregnant woman. In other words, when the end time comes, it's going to come surprising. Maybe you know the end time is out there someplace, and the ten virgins know what's happening, but they're not quite ready. Five of them are not quite ready. So it's as a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. Not the pregnant women, but people who are caught in this. But you, brethren, are not in darkness so that this day should overtake you as a thief. The church knows what's happening in a general way, and more specifically in a detailed way at the end time. The church knows, and we will be warning the world, we are, and telling people, hey, there's problems on the horizon. And I think we're going to see more articles from headquarters because of what's happening in Europe. We do have the elections tomorrow in Europe. Scholz could not keep his coalition together over there. And so I think it was September when the elections were to take place, and they've been moved to February tomorrow on the Lord's Day to them. I think on their calendar, actually, Sunday is the seventh day in Europe. You see a lot of the calendars, and it's Sunday is the seventh day. So we're seeing all of this happen, and then it tells us that we're not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you. You're the sons of light and the sons of day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch. We watch, and we are watchmen. By the mere fact, we know what to watch. We know what's going to happen overall. And we may get ahead of ourselves, but it's better to alert people of at least the possibility of something happening, isn't it? Let us watch and then be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk are drunk at night. Let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, as a helmet the hope of salvation. For God did not appoint us to wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us. So this is what we see then, what we know about the end time. We do know, if we could go back, we could talk about the four empires. And that tells us that it's the Roman Empire that has the resurrections. So you know there's going to be resurrections one after the other. These prophecies in Daniel have taken place. We do know that. We also see in Luke 21 about the end time and the armies that are surrounding Jerusalem. We know that Jerusalem has been surrounded many times, but not with an Israeli people and their government who were not there for about 2,000 years. Israel was not there for 2,000 years, so you can't even count Jerusalem being surrounded by armies. You just can't. That is an end time. So let's go to Isaiah 10 and verse 5. Isaiah 10 and verse 5. And we've read this, and Mr. Clark, you know what comes out to us about every Wednesday? It's, hi, Greg, or your name. And this last one was different. It was on Gaza. Is there ever going to be peace in Gaza? You may not have opened yours yet. Sometimes I don't the same day it comes in. But he went through something normally he doesn't hit on prophecy at all. He doesn't hit on the question of the Middle East. I think this is the first time I've seen a prophetic message to individuals. If you don't get that, you could sign up for that. Isaiah 10 and verse 5 is where we were going. But you see now, and you will be seeing probably more articles on at least the outline of prophetic history, I suppose, or prophetic events that are going to transpire. But Isaiah 10 and verse 5, like I said, it's a dual prophecy, but we know it fits into the end time scenario because of what's happening in Europe, of who Assyria is, and the fact that Jerusalem is going to be surrounded by armies. We know Zechariah talks about it, Zechariah 14, as an end time event, a army that gets into Jerusalem, and also half of the city is taken into captivity. We know for sure that that's when it's going to happen, at the end time. Jerusalem at the end time being surrounded, Zechariah 14 with Jesus Christ coming and setting up his government at that time. And so what do we find then with Isaiah 10? And I think Mr. Clark actually talked about, Zechariah 12, where you find that Jerusalem has been a stumbling block. And you see again that Jerusalem is going to be taken captivity. So Isaiah 10 and verse 5, notice, woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger, and the staff in whose hand is my indignation. I will send him against an ungodly nation, and against the people of my wrath I will give him charge to seize the spoil, to take the prey, to tread them down like the mire of the streets. By the way, if you wonder about Jerusalem also, there's a prophecy in Isaiah 40 that says, you know, Jerusalem has suffered double for its sins. So I'm not going to go there now just because of time. Notice, though, he does not mean so. This is what I was referring to earlier. Nor does his heart even think so. So right now, you would have whoever Assyria is, and we believe we know based on history and where these people ended up, we realize that if it is Europe right now, and we think it is, that there is nothing in their heart to think that they are going to come down at an end time. I don't even think they recognize the prophecy where at the end, the king of the north, I don't know if they even think in terms of describing themselves as a king of the north, but you have that area and the king of the south, and you're going to have a push, something that really is strong, and push in the Bible there is talking about warfare. They push toward the north, and the north comes back down in fury. They are, I think even it has a naval battleship, you know, coming down. You think of the Mediterranean Sea in all of this, because Egypt is mentioned, Ethiopia is mentioned, countries, Jordan is mentioned as being passed by. He does not think this in his heart, but it is in his heart to destroy. And that's why when you read something like Gerhard Marx and the German character, and books like The Europeans, which describe the Germans, you realize that in their character is a war, it's a warfare character. There is just no question about it. So he's going to cut off not a few nations, for he says, are not my princes altogether kings? Is not Calno like Carchemish? Is not Hamath like Arpad? Is not Samaria like Damascus? You can look up what happened with these countries. As my hand has found the kingdoms of the idols, whose carved images excel those of the country they're going to destroy, Jerusalem and Samaria, house of Israel and the house of Judah, we're talking about there. As I have done to Samaria and her idols, shall I not do also to Jerusalem and her idols? Therefore it shall come to pass when the Lord has performed all his work on Mount Zion and Jerusalem, that he will say, I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his haughty looks. And that's what's going to happen. Assyria is going to be punished. First, there's going to be a war with the eastern countries. News out of China, Russia, Iran, cause the king of the north to be disturbed. And that's when they go to war. There is the Battle of Armageddon, as MacArthur said, and that's when Jesus Christ comes. It's that battle where Christ has to intervene, otherwise the entire world would be destroyed. We could go to Matthew 4 on that. So we can see these scriptures here and understand what they're saying. What has been the latest then? How do we wrap this up? Well, what's happened in the last 4 years is the attack against Ukraine. I think all of us know that. When Ukraine was attacked by the Russians, we saw the Russians not going to battle. They said, oh no, we're not going in there, but they had all of their tanks ready to go. And all of a sudden, they began attacking Ukraine. When that happened, you had the European Union saying, we are not going to allow ourselves to give any money to Russia so that they can build weapons. We're not going to buy their oil. And so that's how this started, with the downfall of the German economy. When you have, well, when you have the Greens over there saying, well, no, we've got to cut off all our nuclear plants that are giving us power over there, you know, close them down, which they did. And then they were buying Russian oil, and then they stopped buying Russian oil. But all of this led to, well, the collapse of the German economy. So you have the Russians invading Ukraine. Because of the consequences, you have Germany having an economy which is very strong, making a lot of money off of us and other nations. And then you have the election of President Trump. With all of those three things taking place, now you have, well, I think it was Elon Musk says, we're going to make Europe great again. How many of you saw that? We are going to make Europe great again. That's what he said. And he doesn't even know what he was saying, because with all that's happening, when President Trump says, you know, I don't care if Putin goes to war against any NATO country that is not doing their part, 2% of their GDP going to military. And they're raising it to 5%. If you will read what's happening over there, 5% of the GDP of each nation is supposed to go to making weapons of war. They realize, and if you see, I don't know if I brought the quote up, that there was a an article on the seven quotes that came out of Europe in the last week, and one was from the President of the European Union, President of the Commission. Basically, we have to build our defense. And you'll see that stated over and over again by Keiji Kallas, who's the foreign correspondent now, very strong woman in the European Union. You see them saying, we've got to build a strong economy. But what happened in Germany to their economy? Well, I have an article here, and there's two articles I'll dwell on just at the last part. But we have a fellow in September 28th, 2023, when the German economy was starting to go down. Now, Germany has had a poor economy in the last 2 years. And if you read about what upsets the German people, it's when their economy is going bad. After World War I, you know the Treaty of Versailles, and you know what happened with, I think it's the Treaty of Versailles, sometimes I'm a little off, maybe 200 years off on some of my statements, but I think it's the Treaty of Versailles, where basically at the end of World War I, they agreed to paying reparations to the Allies. And they never came out of a bad economy at all. Adolf Hitler was very upset at what happens, and he wrote Mein Kampf. He comes out of jail, and he has his brown shirts, I believe it is. And in 1928, his brown shirts, his very hard right government, has 8% of the vote. In 1932, 4 years later, they take over the government. They intimidate the chancellor, and they take over the government. So when you see how fast that happened, very quickly, when the Germans are not happy, they will follow a very strong dictatorial rule. They just will. That's their character. They can be very soft and not good soldiers at all and very disorganized. But when they get under a strong leader, that's when you see, well, we have the book of Joel. Read chapter 1 and 2 of the book of Joel, and you'll see what a strong army that they have. So anyway, this man says, is Germany once again reaching peak instability, and what could that mean for Europe? He says, in reality, the biggest headache is likely to come from within, from Germany again. It has to be a repetition of the resurrection of the Roman emperor. And then he goes on to the economy and how it's really hurt. You have Olaf Scholz losing power because of the economy. The coalition falls apart. And then you have a section here on the AfD. That's the Alternative for Germany, which is a right-wing party. In fact, it says here, think German Trumpism, which is interesting. This is 2023. Think German Trumpism. What did he have in mind there? Then it goes on to say, if or when the AfD gathers enough votes, they have 20% of the votes now. Right now, the other parties say we will not make a coalition with them. But you know, if you want to follow the money and follow power, you know that if it's necessary, they will have a coalition with the AfD. And then it says, the double crisis of the German model in economics and politics has many causes. Three of them connect to the war over Ukraine. And then that's a widespread sense that Berlin is sacrificial, vital German interest to the West strategy, great unease about losing too much sovereignty, and the fallout from recession and economic decline. And then you can add to that the fear of an escalation of the war into an open fight between NATO and Russia. So this is happening with the German public. And what do we see? This next article, as this fellow had it right on, but this last article I'm going to read from says this is December 17th, 2024, by the way, which is what, 3 months ago? Germany's government collapses amid economic turmoil. And here's what's happened to their economy in the last 2 years. Europe's largest economy is in the second straight year of flat economic growth and unemployment. Industrial production has dipped 20%. Energy prices has jumped 40%. Germany's bread and butter, the auto and manufacturing, are hurting. Did you read where tariff, 25% tariff, I think, was slapped on Germany's auto and manufacturing industry? That's going to be even worse. And also, they've been left out of the negotiations. And I don't have it in front of me, but in 2014, the leader of Germany said, "We are getting tired of being junior partners of the United States." 2014. And you know this round where they left out Germany in the negotiations and they said, "No, we're not going to bring Germany in until they can work with Russia and stop, you know, hurting Russian, well, they're talking about buying oil from Russia. You have to start buying from Russia because you're hurting their economy, of all things." So that's when they're going to bring the European Union and Germany into the negotiations. And they're saying, "Look, we are not going to go for this." So you have Volkswagen announced plans in October to shutter three German factories, lay off tens of thousands of workers, and institute 10% pay cuts. The largest steel maker, Krupp, posted a $1.5 billion loss in the previous year. Last month, Germany's biggest auto parts supplier, Bosch — we just bought a Bosch product not too long ago — announced 5,500 job cuts starting in 2027. When the Germans are unhappy, watch out, because they're going to get a strong leader, and it may not be this election, but it'll be soon. So what do we have? Well, in conclusion, let's just refer back to 1 Thessalonians 5. And God tells us, be sober, watch ourself. Be sober, watch ourself. But you are watching and you know what's going to happen, meaning you are the watchman. The church is the watchman. And you will see then that we have a responsibility. I hope all of us get behind preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God. And with that, that we are a good warning to the world. We don't want their problems, their deaths being on our heads. We, in love toward the world, brethren, because we do love the world. We don't like to see people, even as immoral as they are, we do not like to see the pain and suffering in this world. But the world does have to repent. And yet still, we must warn them. That's part of our job. So let's get our heart behind the work of preaching the gospel, looking forward to the kingdom of God, and warning the world of the things that we know absolutely are going to come.